Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Race and Lane with your hosts, Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
So, Chuck, good evening. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the weekly interactive Rates and Lanes podcast. Unfortunately, Rico Muhammad is not with us tonight. He's busy putting out some sort of fire down in Atlanta. But instead, my show this week is being co-hosted by my good friend, Michael Lampel. Mike, are you there?
Right here.
Oh, Mike,
right
good
here.
Evening. Welcome to the show, and thank you for, on such short notice, joining me as a co-host. Looking forward to tonight's show. I'm not going to do the regular DAT report. I'm going to bring on our very special guest, Noel Perry. Noel, good evening. Are you there?
I am. Good evening.
Hey, Noel, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Noel, this is Michael Lampel. Michael, this is Noel. This is a last-minute thing, ladies and gentlemen. We were, I just heard earlier that Rico couldn't make it, and we had to make a couple last-minute changes, and Michael agreed to join me tonight. And my daughter, Carly, is managing the switchboard from Vancouver, British Columbia. Tomorrow is her second anniversary, so happy anniversary to Carly and Maddie out on the West Coast. Well, we're not going to waste a lot of time. There's a lot of things going on in trucking and in logistics all over the place. I got to spend last Thursday from 12 to 2 with Noel on the Kevin Rutherford Business Roundtable with Brent Hutto and Todd Eamon. And I got to tell you, that 2 hours went so quick, and we talked about all sorts of things to do with the economy. And I just thought it'd be a great idea to bring some of those things back to our listeners that weren't able to listen to that show on Thursday. Noel, we were talking last week, and you seem to feel that interest rates are going to stay the same until people stop lending us money. Do you think that this is a good time for people to be investing in property? This is something that I'm hearing all the time from people that want to buy that piece of land to open up that small trucking terminal to expand their business and things like that. What's your take on this with the way interest rates look?
Well, the issue with interest rates is in the short term, they're not going to change. The question is, at what time does the great imbalance that we have in terms of the way we're printing money and the way that the federal government in the United States is taking on debt, at some point the markets say, oh, even the U.S. is a risk. But that's not likely to happen right now. However, if you're taking a 10-year or even a 5-year perspective, the chance of that happening begins to become very real. And if that's the case, when you have inflation, what you want is assets, hard assets. The classic example is gold. The problem with gold is it's extremely volatile. But real estate or equities are other examples. And for that matter, tractors are a hard asset, aren't they? So,
well, I don't know.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you think they're depreciating the asset?
Oh, well, but remember that depreciation is a tax thing. Yeah, you know, the question is, how long does that thing last? And, you know, how much are you willing to invest in rebuilding the engine? But here's the point. If you're worried about inflation, you know, a fancy tractor is what, $170,000 right now? Well, it could easily go up to, well, if we had real inflation like we had back in the 70s, or even if we got up to 3 or 4%, 5%, that 170 becomes 200 pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why we have runaway inflation whenever it occurs is people say, oh, I better buy now because if I don't buy, if I hold off, it'll be more expensive. And, you know, so if you're worried about inflation, classic economic advice, you invest in assets. The issue is, what's your time frame? If it's a 1 year, 2 year time frame, I wouldn't worry about it. If it's a 5 or 10 year, I would. You know, it's one of those things we're not quite sure.
Yeah, it's somewhat of a moving target, I guess.
Well, it's
Michael. Any comments on that?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the question really becomes for our listeners who are, you know, small business operators for the majority of them, is if interest rates stay at this level, what happens to their pricing and their bottom line? Meaning, does the amount of interest rates correlate directly to their profitability?
Well, the way I would put it is two things. First off, interest rates relate to inflation. If interest rates are low, then inflation tends to be low. The other side of it is high interest rates, particularly after the low interest rates we've had for so long, were they to increase, it would be very bad for the economy. And when the economy goes south, so it's trucking. You know, the ATA says America moves on trucks, whether it be north or south of the border, and it does. And so if we have economic troubles in the whole economy, we have troubles in trucking. So it's less an interest rate. Well, it's indirect effect. Interest rates have a lot to do with growth. And if interest rates were to go up, we'd have a recession. If they went up a lot, we'd have a depression. But that's another story.
So do you think that the only reason we haven't had a recession or depression now is because the Fed has pumped so much money into this economy?
Oh, that's a pretty deep question, Chuck. I would give two answers. First off, there is some short-term evidence that stimulation helps. It certainly keeps interest rates low in the short term. And so, yeah, the short-term answer is probably yes. The long-term answer is the Fed is distorting decision-making in the economy by purchasing things that wouldn't be purchased otherwise, and all those bond purchases they're making. And therefore, in the medium to long term, it slows growth. But in the short term, it may help. For instance, one of the things that's happening right now, and it may not go on for much longer, but all of those stimulation payments to people who were unemployed have helped to fund the rapid growth in purchases of goods. Services have been hurt, as we all know, including medicine, but people have been buying clothing, and they've been buying recreational vehicles and hockey sticks and all kinds of things at a pretty, you know, it's helped the economy come back pretty rapidly. One of the big questions in the fourth quarter is those payments are about to run out. And so the question is, will our governments go into even deeper hawks to keep them going, or will they be forced by reality to stop? And if that's the case, then either those people are going to have to find jobs to get money, or else they're going to not have any money to spend. For instance, I live in Pennsylvania, and our unemployment fund is empty. I'm sure that's the case in Ontario as well.
Is there some interference? It almost sounds like years ago, if you remember, the typing tools at the lawyers' offices. I don't know what the banging is, but I'm hearing it. Whether there's interference on the line. I thought maybe. Oh, thanks, Michael.
It's not in my office today.
So what?
We're still working. What can I tell you?
So am I.
What's going to happen in Pennsylvania? If, like, who's going to kick in? Is it where the feds are going to come in and
well, that's the hope,
that
I'm sure. The I don't know whether Canadians know this, but most states in the United States do not have the authority to borrow money, at least not directly.
Yeah, we know that. Yeah, you're constitutionally not allowed to run deficits.
Right. So, you know, so if the Pennsylvania cannot issue bonds or something to do that, so they're going to ask their senator, our senator, and the president or the new president, whomever he is, to bail them out.
Well, I think I think it's multi-layered. Unfortunately, I think for America, and I think for Canada as well, but I think America more so, is the constraint that states are living under. And, you know, you take the states, you pile in the municipality debt, then you pile in pension debt. It's a monster amount of dollars. It's a monster.
Yeah. I don't know what the number's going to be for all of 2020, but in April, the average state that was in lockdown had a 50% under shortage of reduction in revenue.
Yeah. Right.
So not only have expenses gone up because of all the support payments, et cetera, but for the year, Pennsylvania is probably going to be down 5 or 8, 9% on revenue, with expenses up maybe 3 or 4%. That's the kind of thing that Dickens wrote novels about.
Right, but I mean,
now, I just have a question.
Ahead,
when you're talking about revenue, is this broad spectrum revenue, including revenue from the sale of diesel fuel and gasoline? Is this everything?
Sure. Yeah. All
revenue.
All incoming revenue, not to include federal revenue, but taxes of all sorts, including Pennsylvania Turnpike revenue.
So I've got a question for you. We're now in the basically modern monetary theory area. And the government's going to print as much capital as it can. And I've said to people for a long time, the debt is not really the problem. The problem is, where are they spending the money? So as God willing, there's a vaccine soon, whatever. So if you're looking at your crystal ball, and as you can see, this is a multi-systemic issue, right, between revenues and so forth and so on. How would you say that the government would tackle restarting the economic engine? Where would, like, we still have pension payments that are coming due, meaning to the regular people, to people
sure.
retired. We have state workers who got to get paid, municipal workers got to get paid, we have federal workers got to get paid, we got corporations. So if you're looking at your crystal ball, and right now I don't seem to think they have a strategy, they seem to be just throwing darts as to where they want to throw money at, how would they begin to grease the wheel at a simultaneous basis?
Well, let's divide this between the feds and the states. The states are not fundamentally, usually, in the incentive business, except through tax breaks.
Right.
And the feds are. But let's look at the feds. And here's my forecast that has two important parts. The first is that between the states and the federal government, there are a whole bunch of social programs that are going to be short of money, particularly in the states. And if you look at who votes for what, the first thing they want is to keep the social programs going, Medicare, Social Security, unemployment, and such. And so my guess is that the majority of any additional stimulus and any additional borrowing will go towards maintaining those services and maintaining those unemployment benefits and also paying those pensions that you mentioned, rather than increasing defense or any of the other programs, the minority of the budget that is discretionary. Now, having said that, the second thing which affects all of us in trucking is there is this hue and cry to get more infrastructure spending. Everybody seems to agree to it. The reason why it hasn't happened is we can't figure out how to pay for it. given this crisis, the probability that we're going to pay for it through tolls has just gone up substantially. And so my forecast is that when we get an infrastructure bill, whether it be under one administration or the other, there will be a fundamental shift in the federal government's attitude towards tolls to include the obviously the interstate highway system.
But
for instance, go ahead.
For instance,
I've got a question here. Is because I don't know a whole lot about your taxation in the United States.
Sure.
What, does it make a difference whether that money is collected through tolls or there's been talk about increase in the fuel tax for trucks, and you could do it for cars and collect
there's
the
no
money
difference.
That way?
Okay. There's no difference. Okay. Tolls are from a money standpoint, are more efficient. They collect a lot more money because you're not going to triple or quadruple the gas tax. And also, as we all know, trucks and cars are getting more efficient. And one of the things that the COVID crisis has accelerated is the slowing of growth and even the shrinkage of vehicle miles.
Mm-hmm.
And so the gas tax is increasing. A unreliable source. Not to mention the fact, of course, that we all know that there are electric trucks and there are gas trucks and maybe hydrogen trucks. And, you know, for instance, I think by 2035, diesel will be a specialty fuel only.
I couldn't agree more. The diesel
not in the next two or three years, but
100
yeah, then.
Years. No.
Yeah.
But it's coming. I think it's just a matter of building the infrastructure. The basic diesel engine, you know, there's a lot of bells and whistles on them now. The basic diesel engine was built by Rudolf Diesel well over 100 years ago. It has not changed in 100 years.
Well, it is it's changed in one important way, Chuck, and that is it's become very complex, which makes it a little less attractive than it was. So,
Well, there's a lot more bells and whistles because of all the pollution stuff.
Of course, yeah. You know, the big change or the driver in this whole thing in the short term is that electricity is cheaper than diesel fuel. So if you have a reasonable supply of electricity, your fuel expense goes down. And, of course, we also know that battery technology and other technologies that could deliver power are accelerating pretty rapidly. I did some work a year ago on this topic, and one more iteration of improvement in battery storage gets a truck a range of 600 miles or so, or 700.
Wow. That's incredible.
So what that suddenly says is that a lot of regional trucks can go electric, whereas they couldn't before. So, and the other advantage of electric, aside from the environmental ones, which is questionable there, is that they are mechanically far more reliable because it's such a simple mechanism.
There's nothing to it.
Yeah, nothing to it. Yeah, I mean, you look at the does Toronto still have those old trolley cars from the 40s?
Yes.
I know I was. Yeah.
You know
like, yeah. I mean, they did 10 years ago.
They run electrical grids on top, right? They run along the electrical wires.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. But the ones you have now are probably 20 years old. And the buses that are running in the town are not. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they're bringing on
the electric buses.
That's the same thing. It's actually an electric bus is a cheaper version of a trolley car. You don't need any track, and it's much more flexible.
Exactly.
Toronto's
still in the data with streetcars.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I was there in, I guess, the early 90s, and they still had some of the old TCC cars. And Philadelphia, which bought some of the used Toronto equipment, still runs 1945 technology. unthinkable with a bus. Yeah, so at any rate. So we should get back to the market. Excuse me.
So let me ask you something, Noel. Right now, the spot market seems to be really hot. And I'm a firm believer. Tell me what your thoughts are. I'm sure that an awful lot of the equipment that normally is servicing the contract and a lot of the spot areas is being redeployed into disaster relief from some of the weather, but between forest fires and hurricanes. What's your thought on that? Is that what you think is going on?
Yeah, let's quantify that. A really big disaster that includes a major urban area like Katrina or the one that hit New York, Sandy, or the one that hit Houston, can generate a 3-5% national increase in truck rates because of what you just said. The good thing, if you want to call it that, the good thing about this event is that it didn't hit a major metropolitan area. And so as devastating as it was to those towns in coastal Louisiana, it's not going to be a Katrina. It might. Now, if you're in that region, it probably is worth 5 or 6 points on truck price. But nationally, it'll barely be noticeable. It takes a combination of big storm and geography to make it happen. The question, however, is this, and it's twofold. The challenge that we have in the industry and the economy, for that matter, is the volatility of this particular economic event. The Prime Minister of Canada turned the light switch off, and in an instant, a third of the economy was dead. And then 2 weeks later, or maybe a couple months later, he turned most of those lights back on again. And we went on the trucking side from 80% of the trucks being full to needing 95% of the trucks.
Right.
And it's very difficult for a fleet to deal with that. For one thing, and let's just think about how a fleet manager looks. Suddenly, 15-20% of your traffic goes away. You lay people off. You park the trucks, and the question is, what happens when the market comes back? And the answer has two parts. First off, how quickly physically can you find the drivers? And you don't do any maintenance when you park that truck, do you? So when you start it up again, you probably have.
Right.
So you've been parking your crap truck, so you got to fix them a little bit, and you got to find these people you laid off. And by the way, with the support payments, most of them were making $1,000 a week.
Yeah, not going to work.
Who wants to sleep in a truck in Manitoba when you can make $1,000 a week sitting at home watching the Blue Jays? Yeah. So
exactly.
So the question is physically how fast can you come back? But the other question is if you're a business person, and I've seen this in the management rooms of the fleets that I've worked with. They say, wait a minute, I'm not going to hire anybody until I'm sure that the business is coming back. So let's get our balance sheet cleaned up. Let's get our income statement cleaned up. And maybe in 2 or 3 weeks or a month, I'll turn the recruiting on. And so what happens in the industry is there's a lag between capacity and need. And so we have this nice, dramatic increase in goods purchases, nice increase in trucking. I estimate somewhere around 12-15% on an annualized basis. We had an increase in the third quarter. But, you know, there's still a bunch of drivers who are sitting home watching TV. So the biggest, you know, so there are two things going on. We had a big surge in demand, and we were short of trucks. Here's the big question, though, that I would be, this is what I'd be worried about if I was running a fleet right now, and this is what I'm worried about as a forecaster. If you look at the fundamentals for the economy, they're not that strong. In the short term, of course, there's pent-up demand, you know, because we turned the light switch off. But the light switch has been on now for, what, for 3 months. And we didn't come into this with a strong economy. And let's, you know, if you live in Alberta, for instance, or in Texas, those oil fields are closed right now, aren't they?
Oh, my God.
And
Alberta is it's awful.
Yeah, I would bet in Canada, well, I know in the States, something like a third of capital investments in the oil fields, and it's probably bigger in Canada. And so you get that problem.
Petrodollar here. That's part of our issue.
And, you know, the people are not consuming services like they did. You know, I mean, how would you like to be the owner of a hotel in Las Vegas right now?
Oh, my God.
Or a bed and breakfast in Victoria. Same thing. People are not going to get on an airplane right now and fly out to Calgary or British Columbia to see the mountains for a while.
No.
So I don't think.
You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. So the big question is when the pent-up demand gets satisfied, when people have bought the RVs that they suddenly think they needed and the golf clubs, what's to sustain the economy? Now, housing has done well. And I don't know if this is happening in Toronto, but in the big cities in the East and the States, people are moving out. I have a friend who owns a house in the Poconos. It's an hour and a half from New York. And he sold his house in one day for $20,000 more than the asking price. Somebody from New York wanted to get out of New York. So it's possible that, you know, this pent-up demand for housing could help the economy. But
that's
huge,
in rural areas, correct?
Yes, it is. Yep. Yeah, New York, it's a disaster. But, you know, if you look at the existing housing sales numbers, they're very good.
Yeah,
now, we don't know whether the people in New York are losing money when they sell that house, but we know that they sold it.
But the question I think right now, which I think is going to be the $64,000 question that I really would like to get your opinion on, is the American economy, like the Canadian economy, I think the European economy, has been fueled by government payments to individuals to keep the economy sustained. The American CARES Act expired July 31. Politics being politics, there's no way the Democrats and the Republicans are going to come to an agreement before November. Neither one is going to
good
make
point.
A deal.
Very good point. Nobody wants to give the other guy credit.
Nobody's going to give in. So now comes the question. You just took away 60% of their support payments for the middle and lower middle of the United States. Now what?
Well, I think you get recession.
They're in recession.
Yeah. What's that?
I think they're in recession.
Well,
the question
well,
is the pressure.
Trucking business is not in recession. Well, I mean, we're talking about trucking, and trucking's not in recession. But, yes, I mean, I think that next year is going to be a big disappointment. I'm hedging on my forecast because I've been a pessimist for 5 years and I've been criticized for being so. But I don't. Let's compare this market with 2018. The fundamentals in 2017 were really powerful. The oil market was booming. The economy was booming. There was we were restricting productivity through hours of service and ELDs. now we're loosening up regulation. They all, oil economies did. The economies, well, goods are booming, but services, you know, services are 75% of the economy or more.
Well, actually, yeah, that's an interesting point that you just said. Goods are booming, but the majority of goods are pre-ordered, meaning a fridge, a house, they're pre-ordered.
Yeah.
Finances have been arranged. So I guess what I'm wondering right now is this. You got a massive issue with eviction moratoriums, which creates
yes,
a backlog on mortgage people have to pay. You now have people are going to have to subsist on whatever state unemployment benefits they get, which is only like $239 a week as opposed to when they were getting
right. and,
$600
and
a week before.
And the states are running out of money too.
Right. So at what point do you think this is going to start getting visible? I guess in a very simplistic word, what I'm about to use, at what point do you start seeing that being shown up in Amazon orders?
I don't know Amazon's order book right now, but the stuff I look at, industrial production, the Institute of Supply Chain Management's PMI thing are up. However, the American Trucking Association's tonnage index went down in July. Right now the signals are mixed. The stock pickers and the financial people are.
But I want to look at that. Well, we could have a 14-hour conversation on that. When you're the Federal Reserve and you're buying everything under the sun, from junk bonds to all of it, there is no more risk. What risk is there if they're going to buy it all anyway? I mean, it kind of explains why Tesla is worth $400 billion for a company with $26 billion of revenue.
They can do that, and the only question is at what point does reality step in? And, you know, people like me have been predicting that it's going to happen for 20 years. It hasn't happened yet. But we've never done it on this scale. If you behave like Brazil, you get treated like Brazil.
Well, I think your prediction. No, I got to tell you, your predictions are right. There's only one thing you and I don't have. We don't have a seat at the table of the Fed, who's concocting every cockamamie idea to keep it going.
Well, but we know what their behavior is. It's well established.
Oh, we know what the behavior is. Sure.
Yeah.
So I think you just
said
well, they're trying to preserve. I mean, Powell's been pretty clear
okay,
in his
all
language.
All right.
Which
sure.
Is, guys,
sure.
He's been very clear, like, guys, this is not good. I cannot keep this patient alive much longer by myself.
Well, you know, that reminds me, we haven't talked about the COVID thing, but that reminds me of the,
no.
of the what's the word, the pressures on the medical community. You know, what
of
we've
course.
Learned from this thing, which something we already knew, is that the medical profession cannot prevent coronaviruses from spreading. You know, it's you know we all get colds, right? We all get flus, and but they can't bring themselves to tell us I can't do anything about it, and neither can the Fed, nor can Joe Biden or my classmate from college, Donald Trump.
Yeah, I think the but I got, you said something interesting just a few minutes ago. So the American Trucking Associated tonnage is down. And the PMI is showing forward. Which one of those is a laggard indicator? Which one's a real indicator?
The trucking measures of trucking are coincidental indicators. They appear to be leading because they are they show up quickly.
Yeah.
You know, the Fed's most stuff. At best, the government indices are monthly, and many of them are quarterly, whereas the truckstop.com is daily or weekly, and the ATA is monthly, and DAT is weekly, and FreightWaves is daily sometimes. So the first indication we get that something's gone wrong comes usually from trucking. PMI is usually a slightly leading indicator.
But it's a quarterly report.
No, it's monthly.
Okay, monthly.
No, it's monthly.
A lot, these days, a lot can happen in a month.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, yes. And, you know, so this is a great time for truckers to hedge.
Okay, right.
Because you know, the market's going up, and by all means, you know, get your trucks on the road, and don't be afraid to ask for more, because, you know, the all of the indicators say the capacity is tight.
Yeah, even though the
fundamentals aren't so good. However, I would not be depending on the first quarter of next year or any of next year to be good. If they are, fine.
Right now, from the tonnage perspective, which I think is probably a real time index, as you said, daily, weekly, and all that.
Yeah.
How, and of course that's a whole host of goods, everything from industrial to consumables and everything else. How far off are they today? In other words, let's say as compared to June 30th and July 31st.
How far off is what I'm.
In comparison to June 30th and July 31st, what percentage decline is there?
Oh, okay. Well, the ATA's number was like either 5 or 7% down in July. The ISM PMI was 54, 56. 50 is good. Less than 50 is bad. And back in April and May, it was down around 46. So it's way better.
Okay, but where is it?
It isn't accelerating it like it was. Where was it a month ago? I think it was around 53. So
and
two
now?
Or 3 points lower. Now it's 54, 56. So it's somewhat better.
So it's
not
the right way, but...
Oh, yeah. It's right. You know, above 50 is good. So that says the manufacturer... Well, what that measure is the opinions and the experience of a whole bunch of purchasing managers. So they do a survey once a month of a whole bunch of people, and they say, how has your business been? How is it now? And what do you think is going to happen? And they concoct this index as a result. And it is the single most reliable measure of the industrial demand that we have in our business.
So today's September.
So
today's September. Now, a lot of the manufacturing goods are being moved. Again, these were pre-ordered before. These are people who put in the down payments and so forth and so on in the last month. I think what is an interesting question, and I'm sure you're studying it every day, is, okay, CARES Act is not going to get renewed. They're 3-1. They're far apart. And there's no indication they're going to come to $2 trillion package. That's the first thing. We'll leave all the other social issues apart. So if they're not going to replenish the coffers of the people, and by the way, I mean, this also begs a good question, which is, when do they start cutting the pension payments of retirees?
Right? Oh, my. Not until after the election, for sure.
Well, I mean, regular retirees. I mean, retired auto workers, retired firemen, retired all them. I'm talking about
the
pension
plans. Yeah, well,
the auto
workers are covered by private things, but the states are the ones that have the short-term liability.
And they can't print money.
And there is some mild precedent, but it's not short term. But the state of Rhode Island elected a treasurer and then a governor who persuaded the unions to take less pension. So it's possible. It's just very difficult.
But that's Rhode Island. Yeah, that's Rhode Island with a grand total population of a town in Maine.
Well, it just says it's possible. No one else thought it was possible. And, you know, Rhode Island is a union state. Now, you know, does that mean that Chicago is suddenly going to
see
the light? No. Well, Chicago's going to go bankrupt.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm wondering, which is, you know, trucking aside, I think this is the part which I'm watching very closely, is we now have 3 months that nothing is going to get done. Today's September 1, so people are already behind in their mortgage payments, rent payments today. So, as you said, I think your prediction is right. I think it's going to be even faster than – I think the prediction is going to be it's going to get worse even faster than you think. Because if they don't find a way to grease the wheel, then they will destroy demand rapidly.
Well, you know, a year ago I was out on the limb. Nobody agreed with me. Now you guys are making my argument and you're doubling it. I agree with you guys. I think we have a major risk. However, there's one thing that's really important to remember, and that is the future is unknown. If it wasn't, it would be indistinguishable from a memory. And the hard part in these volatile things that we're talking about, Chuck, is getting the turning point. It's one thing to say the Fed is stupid or the
right.
The government's overborrowing or Pennsylvania's got a shortfall. It's another
right.
thing to say at what point does it unravel. And what we have seen, and Mike, you talked about it earlier, the world debt markets have been amazingly tolerant of our borrowing, largely, by the way, because we are the handsomest ugly boy at the dance. If you want to dance, you come dance with us. You know, would you lend money to Italy right now?
Well, I don't know if it's lending money. I think the world is awash in cash. And if you're right now Warren Buffett, you got $160 billion
in
cash.
Yeah.
You're going.
I
need one
that's
asset.
That's another explanation. It all comes together. I mean, look at Japan. 250 some percent of GDP is borrowed. You know, I mean their deficit is, but that's.
And they're negative rates.
At some point, the realities that our grandfathers and our mothers and our fathers taught us at the kitchen table about don't spend more money than you have has to come home. And, you know, the question is when. It's going to come home in Italy now. It's going to come home in France soon. It's going to come home with us sooner than we thought, but probably not until mid-decade or longer. How do they protect themselves?
How do our listeners, knowing that the wheels are, you know what, it's not a matter of if the wheels are falling off, it's when the wheels are falling off.
Okay, well,
so
I
think
you,
listeners are...
Yeah, sure. You know, what are the principles? They're pretty simple. First off, in the absence of inflation, we haven't had that yet, you make sure you have enough cash.
Bingo.
This is not a time to be running close to the edge to get an extra load. That's one thing. Second thing is right now they need to be not shy on pricing as long as this market stays strong. The next thing is they don't want to be adding a lot of capacity. And certainly they don't want to be buying new tractors or adding tractors. Yeah, they can call their drivers back if they haven't yet, but they can lay them off again. You want to keep the cost variable.
Right, and I would also emphasize one thing. Keep a very tight rein on your receivables.
Good point.
Big time.
Yeah, that's something I hadn't thought about. That. Yeah, and the other thing, by the way, is if there was ever a time to suck up to your best customers, now's the time.
Yeah.
You know, when the market's tight, that's when they need you badly, and that's when their memories are most likely to, you know, be stimulated so that when the worm turns, like it did in 2019, if you remember,
And you know, one of
they
the
might
things,
help
that I,
you.
One of the things I said that we've when I was on the show before, Noah, and I think you might agree, is I also said to the listeners, which is get the credit ratings of your top customers. Find out what financial position they're in.
You know, I had a conversation with my investment guy a month ago about all of this, and he told me that what he's doing with my money is he's investing in blue chip equities. And what you just said is the way to invest trucking fleets capacity and blue chip customers. People that you know are not going to get clobbered by the recession, people you know who will pay their bills. That's a great point. You know, it's
think
like,
of all the guys
who
are delivering for Lord and Taylor. Think of all the guys who are delivering for J. Crew. All of those guys right
Sears,
now are getting
hurt.
All
Sears. We could just name them off all night. You know, there's enough. You know, and a lot of them, it was just lousy management. It had nothing to do with COVID.
Well,
but
think of all the
Briggs and
Stratton. Think of all the trucking
not,
guys.
Did not
there you
go,
sure.
Because of COVID.
Well, you know what happens? All the COVID has done is to accelerate things that were already in place.
Exactly.
And it happened in 1930.
Yeah.
It happened in 08, didn't it? And it's happening. It will happen again. Well, it's happening now, and it'll happen in spades. I think next year, you know, Sears and that Kmart will be gone next year, probably. Don't quote me, but that, you know.
Well, there's a report.
Right.
Yeah, there's a report that came out that said that 25% of malls are going to be shuttered in the next 5 years.
And that's even before we talk about what we're talking about here. That's a structural thing. You know, it turns out, I didn't see it coming, but the mall is an obsolete landform.
Yep.
And
all the jobs
go with it. The other thing, by the way, that's been accelerated by the COVID is the vulnerable position of the big downtown cities. Why would you pay? What is the square footage on the 20th or the 80th floor of a big building in Toronto? Why would you? And how long does it take to commute downtown Toronto these days? I mean, you know, normally, you know, why would you spend an hour or two in a car? You know, what, 2 or 3 hours in your car when you can be working from home?
So then, that makes an interesting question, which is, at what point do all of the changes that have been implemented in the past 6 months, do you feel that the changes that have been implemented will not be able to be undone? Meaning behavioral patterns, commuting patterns.
Okay. I'm going to divide that into two pieces. Most of the responses that we as people have done, and even the government, to the contagion will go away. People have a fundamental need to mix with each other. We're not going to wear masks the rest of our lives. If you look at Google the 1919 World Series sometime, and you'll see pictures of people crowded in the stands in Crosby Field next to each other, you know, right after the worst contagion we've had in the last 200 years. So that goes away. What the COVID has done is to accelerate four or five things that are already happening, like city troubles, like the demise of traditional retail, like like onshoring manufacturing again, because we've been reminded that if you depend on another country that's 16,000 miles away, you might have troubles. And there's probably a list of ten underlying trends we all know something about that are going to go away. For instance, would you buy a movie theater right now?
No, unless it was located
unless
in a great
you're
place
turn
into a housing.
Right. You know, and so those things get accelerated. And, you know, our half-hour conversation about budgeting and the Fed's behavior is another example of the same thing. The excesses that the governments have done that we've elected people to do for us, by the way, it's not them, it's us, that's been accelerated by this, and at some point it has to change. And so all of these things are coming together. You know, and the one thing that is pretty cool about this whole deal is goods still have to move one place to another. And, you know, it's we may have automatic trucks in another 15 years or something like that, but the stuff's got to move. And, you know, you still have oil in Alberta, not in Quebec. And Texas,
yeah, but I don't know how valuable. You know, that stuff's pretty expensive to get out of the ground.
Well, that's less, much less valuable, of course. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's not Texas crude.
Yeah. Well, but hell, I wouldn't be investing in sweet Texas crude now either. The irony of the one of the ironies of this whole thing is the concern about global warming, which in the short term is a very real thing. In another 50 years, we're not going to be burning any fossil fuels. You know, they'll all be replaced. Mm-hmm. And you know, some of us, not me, but many of the people in the audience will see that happen. I might see a little bit of it, but not much. But I think we're going to look back on this time like our parents and grandparents looked at the 30s. You know, I think we're headed, and I'm not sure if I said this when I was on the show last, but I think we're looking at a depression. You know,
I think you're right.
4 years of big trouble. And what happens, and here's the thing for business in a recession. In a recession, you're forced to make hard choices you wouldn't otherwise. You're forced to make changes and to get more productive. And all those inventions that got done in the 20s that would have freed up people weren't laid off until 1930. And, you know, so when the economy came back in 34, and it did come back, by the way, employment didn't, because we couldn't figure out yet how to employ these people. We did, but that takes longer. And I think we're in this huge digital productivity revolution.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to have to find other ways to employ each other. And
yes.
And by the way, it's not going to be making stuff. It's going to be serving.
Yeah, I mean, the manufacturing part is the manufacturing now is, you know, you look at how many people are used to build a car as a good example, right?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, or steel.
Yeah, I mean, so I think servicing is going to be there. But, I think your analysis is correct in terms of, but I think for most, you know, there's no joke, right? A recession is when my neighbor loses his job, but depression is when I lose my job.
It's extreme. You know, we're in for a very difficult time. We've had, how many years now since 1946? The world has been pretty nice. And that's I'm 73. So my whole life has been spent in the best economic boom in the history of the world. And, you know, there's something called the Chondrietive cycle. I may have mentioned it before. It's a 30-year cycle that is encouraged by technology, and we're in one of those swings of that. You know, where we're going from one kind of an economy to another, in the same way that we went from manufacturing to services and to digital to computers in the 80s. We're doing it again. And there's always some pain as we make the adjustments. And the question is, unfortunately, often our response is to try to stop the changes. And that causes even more trouble when we get into things like Nazism or other, you know, political messes and wars. You know, World War II had a lot to do with the Depression.
Sure.
And, you know, Nazism came because Germany was, had big inflation and people were jobless.
Right. Yeah, and Hitler's policy.
Yeah, and, you know, so the question is, do we behave reasonably like the U.S. did in the 30s? Or do we behave unreasonably like the Italians did in the 30s? That's the big question.
That we can have a lot of fun in talking about behaving.
Oh my, we could
today. Yeah. We have a lot of fun on that one. But
you know,
none of us want death threats.
You know, lest we despair. Winston Churchill said something that's so wise. He said, and I'm paraphrasing: democracy is incredibly messy and inefficient. It's just that we've tried everything else and nothing else works.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we're going to, the most likely case is we're going to stumble through this, and if not us, our children will be telling their children for 50 years about what it was like during that time, like my parents told me about both the Depression and the war.
Well, I'll be honest with you, I'm actually, the American system is a mess. But as I like to say to Canadians sometimes when they comment about the United States, I said, you know, would you like to live next to Russia? I mean, if you want to be a neighbor, you can go live somewhere
or
else.
Or Italy. Yeah.
Or Italy. You know, yeah. I don't mind living in Italy. I'll take Italy any day.
But I like to eat in Italy, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I think for all the stuff that's going on, I am reminded of the 2000 election between Gore and Bush. And I say, look, guys, no other country on earth is separated by 500 votes and no one got killed.
Isn't that extraordinary?
In parts of the world, two guys argue on a goat and 50 people get killed.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're going to test that tolerance again in November.
I would hope this is a Canadian. This is a Canadian who looks down south all the time. By the way, I got a great quick story for you. An American journalist is being interviewed by a Canadian journalist. This was many years ago. This was a CBC interview. And a Canadian journalist was trying to explain to the American journalist why Canadians feel resented that the Americans don't pay attention. And the American journalist said, have you noticed what happens when we pay attention to countries?
that's rich. Oh, Lord, that's rich. Ooh.
And the Canadian guy said, good point.
You could argue, by the way, that go ahead. Yeah, we're getting out of time.
We've done a real quick job in burning up an hour here. We're just about there. And I just don't want to lose this because we go off of this isn't taped after 8 o'clock. So, Noel, if you wouldn't mind, could you just tell the listeners how they can get in touch with you if they want?
Okay. You can find me on the internet just by typing in my name, and you'll find my website, and I welcome your calls or your emails. And one other point, I am profoundly optimistic about the future of both Canada and the United States if we can simply manage this necessary change process.
Yeah, I know. And as Rodney King said, can we all just get along?
Yeah.
Yeah, very true.
By the way, Noel, what is the name of your website?
Oh, it's called transportfutures.net.
Okay.
Transportfutures.net. But if you simply type in my name, it'll take you right to
the
website.
Okay.
And Michael, before we get out of here, how can our listeners get in touch with you?
Well, if you want crazy prognostications, michael.lampel@gmail.com. I will provide prognostications for everything on earth. And I can tell you one thing. Whatever I tell you to do, do the opposite.
Well, listen, ladies and gentlemen, we're getting ready to close down. I want to thanks my daughter, Carly, out on the West Coast. Thank you very much for looking after the tech side of things tonight. Noel, I want to thank you. As always, you are a phenomenal guest, and it's so much fun and so refreshing to listen to you. Michael, you're a great friend, and I appreciate you on a second's notice coming out tonight. To our listeners, you could have been anywhere else, but you are here tonight. And on behalf of my usual host, Rico Muhammad, and myself, Chuck Snow, we wish everybody a good week. Stay safe. Keep it between the mustard and the mayonnaise, as Rico says, and like I say, catch you on the flip-flop. We'll see you in a week.
Noel, remember one thing. Vote early and vote often.
Yes, I intend to. Yeah. All right. And other point, I am the son of a Canadian, by the way, so I guess I'm a dual citizen.
That's why you're polite.
Yeah. See you guys.
Take care.